Own an Airstream? Check out our book, Restoring a Dream, available on Amazon.com.
Have a specific episode you want to hear? No problem. Head over to thevap.locals.com. You can listen to any episode anytime. Stream it directly to your phone or on your computer. You can also pick from one of our many curated playlists to hear a specific topic. So head on over to thevap.locals.com. Now enjoy the show.
You're listening to The VAP, the Vintage Airstream Podcast, Episode 6, for November 24th, 2005.
For Phoenix or somewhere near there. Just passed an all-night propane stop. Had conversation with some local cop. Oh, it's Saturday night.
Shepherd, I'd like to thank you for tuning in. That was Rick Seeberg's In a Toaster Moon from his Who Come Down album. I'd like to thank Rick for sending that in to us. Before we get started with the show, I'd like to go over a few updates we had on our website. We had a Listen Now button. You can head on over to thevap.com, click on the Listen Now button, and it'll start playing the latest episode for you. We also have the VAP Listener Map. If you haven't had a chance to add yourself to the map, now's a good time to do it. Head over there, click on the VAP Listener Map, enter your name, zip code, and you can even upload a picture of your trailer if you have one, and it'll plot you on the map. It's kind of cool to see all the VAP listeners across the United States, and we even have a couple of listeners outside of the country now. So let's try to fill up every state we can and move it around the world. And for our advanced computer users out there, we added an XML button on our website. Click on the XML button and take that link that it gives you. Put that into your news reader program, and you'll automatically be notified of any updates in our podcast feed. So without further ado, we'll head right on into the show. Okay, here we are back for episode 6. Again, we have with us Colin Hyde and Rob Baker. Glad to have you guys back.
Sounds
good.
Glad
to be back, Tim.
Always looking forward to the show.
Well, do we have anything to discuss about episode 5? We talked about black tanks a lot and polishing, and we had Steve Henshin on from Vintage Trailer Supply. You guys had anything that we need to go over for that?
I really enjoyed having Steve on, and just was wondering with Colin if he's got that, was it a cruiser up there yet?
No, it's a 56 Caravaner.
Caravaner, yeah. I know it's on its way. I was wondering if it's made it.
No, it hasn't made it yet. It's supposed to be here before the snow flies, and I was pointing out that the snow actually has flown here already, although there's nothing left on the ground, but it's we'll probably be snowed in another month or so. It's been promised to come here late this week or early next, so...
You guys are talking about Steve's trailer he's going to send to you?
Yeah.
Yep, that. And then this past week, Colin came down and we finished up tearing out the inside of my 58 Sovereign on the road. And talking about tanks, we dug all the way back to where that holding tank is for the toilet in the very back, the fiberglass one. And so you can see that in pretty good pictures on the blog.
Oh, but, why don't you give us the address for your blog?
Blog is sweetsovereign.blogspot.com.
All right, and we'll add that to the show notes.
Yeah, I've got quite a few pictures on it. It's got a little other adventure that Colin and I took last weekend, trailering back to his place, of 1946 Vagabond tin can trailer. That's another story on its own.
It's not quite an Airstream, but it's it is cool, and it is aluminum.
That's right.
Well, we can always change the name to the Vintage Aluminum Podcast.
It fits.
Either that or the VVP, Vintage Vagabond Podcast.
Yeah, there you go.
We'd probably have one listener, though.
There's not too many of those trailers around?
No, not too many. It's 26 foot, and it's the birchwood all interior screwed together on the inside to a steel tubular frame and all aluminum outside skin. You can see a few pictures of it on the blog if anybody's interested.
Do you have pictures on the inside of it as well?
No, but I do have some good pictures of the inside I could post.
Oh, I'm sure people love to see that wood interior.
Oh, it's a pretty nice interior, too, wouldn't you say, Colin?
Oh, it's beautiful.
All righty. I got the nice opportunity to check out the new Wanderlust book that Airstream has out. And just give you a few little facts about it. It was written by Russ Banham, and it's 192 pages. And it talks about the 75 years that Airstream's been in business. And they actually do a very good job covering the history of Airstream from when they started with Wally all the way up to present day and what they plan on doing in the future. It's very good reading and a lot of great pictures. And the book itself, the quality of the pages and the binding and stuff, it's really well done.
Yeah, I was really impressed with it. It was a lot of insight into Wally's life and what brought on the whole trailer thing, and quite frankly, even going up through Argosy's and the hard times and the good times of the whole company history, which was really quite interesting for me. I've read a lot of the other books and whatnot written about it, but this one is quite in-depth.
Seen it twice through Colin when we've gone camping with him. Yeah, I can attest to it. It's very well put together, and you know, love the layout and the pictures, and you know, we've actually had some discussions over the Beatrice years trailers with Rich Lure from Airstream Life, what years it actually started and all that. Now, there's two versions of that book, correct, Tim?
Yes, there is. Well, there's two ways they're selling it. They're selling just the book itself, and then they're selling the special edition. And the book is actually the book is actually the same for both, but the special edition comes with a handmade at the factory aluminum cover, where it's actually like a sheath where the book kind of slides in, and there's like a felt type lining in there, and it slides in and it's riveted together, and it has a nameplate on there with a serial number.
Is it polished?
It's pretty shiny.
or is it clear coated?
Yeah.
Now, aren't there some other goodies in that aluminum coated one?
I think I have to Walburize it. I forgot about that.
Get out the Vulcan.
There you go.
Yeah.
No, it's a very nice case. It's pretty cool.
It comes with some goodies in the back, right?
It comes with a DVD. Now, the DVD on it has four of their different three of their caravans and one of the little movies they produce called Building Dreams is Our Business. They have Cape Town to Cairo, the 1959 to 1960 caravan. They have the Mexico caravan from 1957, and they have the Guatemala caravan in 1966. Now, if either of you guys or any of our listeners out there purchase the VAC DVD that they had for sale, probably I think a couple years ago.
I had one.
Yeah, you'll have a lot of these or all of these videos already. However, the one that Airstream has put out, it's a little better quality as far as the way the transfer was done. And the DVD layout actually has chapter selections and whatnot, just like a regular DVD would. I talked to Fred. He's the VAC historian, and they were selling the DVD, like I said, a couple years ago. And I asked him if it was still for sale because I heard some rumor that it wasn't available anymore. And they actually had to quit selling it because they were having some production issues, compatibility issues with a number of the DVD players out there. They wouldn't play the disc. They would stop and skip and stutter and have those kinds of technical problems. So, unfortunately, they actually had to quit marketing that. So, this is your chance, if you miss that, to get a copy of that. A really nicely done DVD.
I have a copy of the VAC one, and you're right. The copy I have is actually the second variation, and the first one didn't work at all. The second one worked several times, and it stopped, and the DVD drive would overheat, do all kinds of crazy things. Rob figured he might be able to figure it out somehow, but
yeah, we tried it at the Cherry Blossom. We tried it down at Cherry Blossom and got a little bit of it to work, but the reason I don't have one yet is I've asked Santa Claus to bring me one, so I'm hoping it shows up in my stocking on Christmas Day.
Well, Tim, is that set available from Airstream without the book? Because I've already got the Pauper's copy of Wanderlust, but I got it from a gentleman that was at Homecoming, I guess, that grabbed it for me early on, and he didn't even tell me there was another version or option available. So I'm kind of curious about getting these DVDs as well.
As far as I know, right now, this is not available separately. The book by itself, which, like I said, very nicely done, nice binding and hardback book, is $39. I think it's like $39.99. Then the next step up is $99 for the special edition with the aluminum sleeve, and the DVD comes with it. And it's just a DVD that's attached to the inside back of the book, little sleeve in there. As far as I know, you can't get the cover or the DVD separate.
Oh well.
Maybe at some point they'll do that, but as far as I know, you can't. So, but the cases are all serial numbered, so I assume it's going to be a limited edition to get that. So, hey, Rob, maybe Santa Claus will bring you a 001, huh?
Yeah, it'd be kind of cool. So, yes, and the Airstream's website says, get a limited edition Wanderlust book with a specially designed aluminum cover manufactured at the factory. It's kind of cool. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Got my fingers crossed anyway.
Well, let's put it this way. If you have the Hot Wheels model of the Airstream, you know how they came out with those? If you got an Airstream screensaver, if you have the Airstream necklace charm, then you're going to have to go ahead and get the special edition Wanderlust book. If you don't have all that stuff already, then probably just the regular edition will suit you fine.
Now, does this mean you qualify as a redneck if you have all that stuff?
Well, maybe a silver neck.
There you go, silver neck.
Well, Colin, let's move on. You have a restoration update for our 65 Caravelle?
Yeah, the Caravelle seems to be it's moving along with some other projects here at the office, but we've got the brand new Gaucho fitted into the front of the 65 Caravelle now, and it's bolted down through the floor to extension outriggers with weld nuts on the back, so it's very solid. We've folded it down, and with an insert up at the front between the wall and it, you end up with a bed that's 56 inches wide. Not sure how long, but 6 foot or a little more than 6 foot, I guess. But it's basically a huge bed. When the thing folds up, the leading edge of the seat itself is just sticks out into the doorway by maybe half an inch or so. So it really fits in there beautifully. It's very, very comfortable. The look suits the trailer. So that's going well. We've also fitted in all the original bathroom and closet cabinets and galley, still in their crude, tired form, but we're using them to mock up the space for our new small dinette table built in on the street side, which will have a pair of Legomatic chairs, vintage Legomatic chairs to sit at this table with. We're also trying to position in the flat screen TV that'll be mounted on the bulkhead on the street side as well to be viewed from this nice new gaucho. So it's going to look and feel like 65, but you're going to notice some differences like the big screen or flat screen TV and the modern gaucho, but it'll all be blended in there with flooring and Zolotone colors and the rest of the woodwork to suit the period.
Now, is the new flooring in there yet, Colin? I was up there, Tim, a week and a half ago, Saturday, and when the time changed, and I got to actually tour the 65 and the floor. That is solid. But I was wondering if the floor is in or if you're doing all this mock-up with the new floor out still.
The floor basically gets put in after the electrics are done. The flooring, floor covering gets put in after the electrics, after it's been re-insulated, after you put the interior aluminum back in and Zolotone it, then is the best time to really apply the flooring. And then after that, of course, you start putting the rest of the interior in. So basically, we wanted to get all our sizings figured out, so we make sure that whatever holes that have to be filled in the walls or drilled out in the walls are done before you get any final finishes in. Because we want to add a lot of different new electrics, and of course the battery's going in a different spot, and the charger's got a new charger, and it'll have an inverter as well. We've also installed a house air conditioner on the floor just behind the street side wheel well. And that's going to be venting out through the floor and through the side of the trailer. So it doesn't look like there's anything on the roof. Of course, there won't be anything on the roof, but it'll look very original on the outside, much in the same vein as installing the gray tanks within the floor cavity. So even when you look underneath the trailer, you won't see some kind of protrusion hanging down. The air conditioner will be vented into the trailer through a grill on the cabinet door, so it really won't look any different from the inside other than the fact that you'll have nice cool air flowing throughout the trailer.
Yeah, I was just going to tell Tim that we're planning to do the same type of air conditioner design in the Sovereign of the Road, so you're not ruining the lines of the outside of the trailer up top having a big air conditioner sticking up there. Since mine never came with one yet on top, and neither did this one, did it, Colin?
No, although I have seen people put air conditioners on the top of Caravelles, and quite frankly, it's acceptable for many people, and I think it's probably more acceptable to be nice and cool in the desert or in the very hot climates and then take away possibly some from the aesthetics. But I like the clean lines better, so if we can install it somewhere else and have it work properly and more importantly also, it's a house air conditioner mounted inside is quite a bit cheaper than an RV unit. Although there will be noise issues as well, but we're going to try and insulate against them the best we can to limit the noise intrusion.
Oh, back to the gaucho. You said you already installed it, or you just laid it in for the layout?
Well, it was you lay it in. The problem is that when you fold the bed part of it down, it moves forward, and the balance is off. And if it's not tied to the floor, the gaucho will actually flip over, so you can't get a feel for sitting on the edge of the bed when it's open, or you can't lie on the bed to figure out the rest of the look of the interior. So you really need to drill and tap or weld nuts or whatever it is on the underside of the outriggers or framework that's supporting the gaucho in order to really test it properly. So it's a permanent installation. However, the gaucho was likely to be in and out several more times before the trailer's finished.
Is this an original gaucho, or just one you guys found for it?
Well, it's an original Airstream gaucho out of a current model.
Oh, I see. So is the gaucho across the front or across the side?
It's across the front. Originally, there was also a gaucho on the side, but that's turning into our sort of mini dinette, but it's not really a dinette. It's sort of a built-in table with folding chairs.
Yeah, going with that leg-o-matic chairs adds a cool vintage touch to it also.
Yeah, and the funny thing is we've sized them up because I have a set of four for our 59 Ambassador International. And on the each end of the gaucho, there's a space about 4 or 5 inches wide by, you know, the height of the gaucho. We're going to build the cabinet fronts there, and they'll be able to slide the chairs in one on either end of the gaucho as storage, so they'll always be close at hand.
Hey, Rob, can you explain what a Leg-O-Matic chair is for those who may not know?
Leg-O-Matic chairs, they actually fold into three. They're like a three-piece chair that when you pull them apart, they actually fold into place and lock into place. Four-legged chair. They're known in the vintage community as to be quite the chair to have on the road, and as they fold up very nice for storage. I've got four myself for the 58.
They were an optional extra, certainly through the 50s, through the 60s, and I think right through the 70s as well. And they're made out of hardwood. There's a lot of different variations of them, but they all got the same mechanism where the four legs literally fold together underneath the seat of the chair, and then the backrest folds down against the seat as well. So the chair itself is maybe 18 inches by 18 inches by, say, 4 inches thick when it's all folded. But when it opens up, it appears to be, it doesn't look like a cheesy folding chair. It looks like a proper miniature dining room chair. And they're actually
very
comfortable.
Very solid, too. Very sturdy. And they were used in the old vintage trailers, especially like the Overlander or Ambassador and up. They had quite this good-sized living room. And they had the old drop-leaf fold-down table that they would pull these Leg-O-Matics out and have, you know, you could seat four in the living room for dinner.
Are these chairs still something you can easily find, or you got to do a scavenger hunt?
eBay it.
eBay.
There you go. eBay. Prices will go up now.
I got my two off eBay, and as soon as I won the auction, the seller emailed me, "I got two more that match it. Do you want them?" And, of course, I was looking for four. They were going for quite a bit on eBay at one point, but just like everything on eBay, it cycles through, and now they're you can get them on eBay pretty decently.
Speaking of dining chairs, I'm sure since this is our Thanksgiving edition, I'm sure people are gathering around the table and they're playing this for their relatives at the turkey dinner table today.
It's a must yes. Play during the dinner portion.
So I thought we might as well talk some turkey. Have either of you guys cooked like a big-time Thanksgiving-type meal in your trailer or while you were camping?
Well, several weeks ago, myself and my wife, being Canadian, our Thanksgiving is somewhat earlier than the American Thanksgiving. It actually coincides with Columbus Day.
We won't hold it against you.
Okay. Anyway, we celebrate both of them, so any reason for a celebration is good for us. Anyway, Rob and his family came camping with us in our Airstreams in the Adirondacks, which was actually quite chilly. My wife and Rob's wife Zoe is really into the fireplace. So they created, it wasn't a turkey, unfortunately, but it was a large chicken, so it was the same family. They did a large chicken inside a Dutch oven, a cast iron Dutch oven, which is sort of a big pot with a lid sitting on a trivet, which supports the pot above the fire itself. And anyway, this was all done in the fire with potatoes and whatnot, and took several hours to cook. And it was we're all doing it with working on it with great interest, but it tasted really good with all the fixings. And we sat in front of the trailer and.
What temperature was it? 39 degree weather.
39 degrees or something?
39 to 40. Yeah. It was cold. We're up at Fish Creek State Park in the Adirondacks. The wind was coming off the water pretty good, too, all weekend. But we'll say we had the chicken, and she had the stuffing inside it. Took about 3.5 hours to cook it. Collins and I's job was to keep the fire going. The neighbors were gone. They left, departed that morning, so we actually commandeered their fireplace, and so we had two fires going, one for, you know, cooking. We had we have sweet corn, too, I think.
We had acorn squash wrapped in foil that was done on the fire as well. But we had one fire to supply the coals, and then the other fire was where we were cooking the actual with the Dutch oven, and you actually put the coals on the top lid and a few underneath, and you keep rotating the thing around, and it worked really well.
Sound like you guys had a regular assembly line going there.
Oh, it was a full, you know, 7-course meal, 5-course meal, and the best part was the Dutch oven dessert.
Yeah, well, that was slick. That was apple crisp done in the downsized version of the Dutch oven.
Oh, wow.
That was wonderful as well.
And the kids actually fell asleep before we had dessert. They went to bed, but the next morning they remembered the apple crisp and were asking for it.
Oh, sounds like a wonderful meal. What about the people who might want to cook inside and they haven't really gone through their propane systems yet? When we talk about checking out a propane system on your trailer, I mean, is that something you should do every year? Should you go through and check over the connections with soapy water and make sure they're not bubbling up and leaking? And what are some good practices for checking out your propane lines and all that stuff?
I bought that 67 Tradewind, and of course the fridge wasn't working. And Colin and we were boondocking up my father-in-law's farm. And we started off doing just what you just said, Tim, soapy water around the connections up front by the regulator. But then actually we turned to the stove first we lit that because it's easiest to do, and we used that to get the air out of the lines, and then we worked our way back to the fridge.
Generally, the stove, lighting the stove typically will get most of the issues out because it's the largest orifice, I believe, and there's no pilot lights, there's no thermocouples or anything. You just crank it on and leave the burner, your fire source there until it lights. But, you know, even before you do that, you can get down underneath. It's not a bad thing to do to go and turn your propane on and then go over all the joints. Typically, the joints are made underneath the trailer. There really shouldn't be any joints within the belly pan because that would be a major disaster. And the propane lines typically go, it's a T-section or T-junction underneath the trailer. They go straight up to the appliance that's above it. And so all of the joints should be very accessible. And certainly go over them all with soapy water with the tanks turned on to check if there's any issues. A lot of trailers that come in here, we're really surprised. You know, we haven't touched anything on it, or we've taken one thing out and we replace it. We put it back in again, and you go over and you test the joints that you've opened up or tightened or loosened or whatever. And that's one major thing that, you know, you can see issues with. But it's surprising how many times that we find leaks further down the system that, you know, we've never touched, and more than likely the owners or previous owners had no idea of all the gas that was leaking out earlier.
Those leaks you're talking about, are they at joints?
Typically, yeah. They're at the flared joints. The flare, for some reason, it may have cracked around there, or it may have come loose, or there may have been some corrosion or whatever. And what also happens, which is sounds kind of strange, but when the propane lines go along and they, you know, go into a T and go up into the trailer itself through the belly pan, sometimes there's road debris or stuff in the campground that hits those joints and it'll bend the copper line over. That can cause big problems as well. And the other thing that happens is propane lines, where they're fastened to the bottom of the trailer, there's all these brackets along the belly pan. Oftentimes those fasteners will corrode away, or the straps will corrode away, and the propane lines will be left hanging below the trailer. And that adds stress on all the joints. So you should really check on all that, because that can be very, very dangerous.
You had something to add, Rob?
Yeah, I was going to say that thinking about it, your stove is probably the highest point in the propane system as far as where your burners are. You get back in the vintage trailers, and you've got the gas lamp. A lot of them had the gas lamp option. So you might want to, you know, start there as your highest point to get, you know, air out if you haven't used your system in a while. but your trailer could have. I was just counting them on my hand. My 85 34-footer, I had 6 propane systems on board. Of course, I had the stove, the fridge, the catalytic heater. Actually, 5, I guess. And then I had 2 propane furnaces, one up front and one in the rear, Suburbans. Since 1968, when I bought that, I full-timed in it for about 4 years when I was back single. And since I was full-timing, I never really had to do the purging. Keeping all 5 systems running, you know, never really had an issue since I was full-timing. But if you were going to store it over the winter time, as the stove is the highest, usually start there, and it usually will take care of the air.
So to kind of explain that a little bit to people who haven't really worked with gas appliances, like I know on my fridge, I have a newer model fridge. You turn it to gas, and it starts the electronic igniter, and you have to push the button to get it to light. If you haven't gotten the air out of the lines, then you're going to be pushing, holding that button for a long time. So a really good way to help get things started is to light 2 or 3 burners on your stove, let them run for a little bit, or even let them run while you're lighting your fridge or your hot water heater or whatever you're having trouble getting lit. Provide you checked your system out, of course, beforehand, then that'll get the air out of the lines like Rob's talking about and help get those things lit. If somebody's working on, because I've had to work on my gas lines, had to do some work on the flare fittings, why don't we talk about that a little bit? Because I know people have maybe done some plumbing where they've had to use Teflon tape and stuff like that, and they may not be familiar with a flared fitting, how to work with one.
There's flared ends you can get at any of the box stores, hardware stores, and whatnot. But the tools really to make the flare is what's critical. And they're available through auto parts supply places or even the big box stores. But I think that's the best joint or the recommended one, certainly for propane. They don't use any sort of Teflon tape on a flared fitting. That can cause bigger issues. Now, on the, I'm not sure exactly the terminology for it, but the other end of the threaded fitting, which oftentimes goes into your regulator, I think that's a standard sort of
like a pipe thread?
Pipe thread, I guess. There's a special dope or Teflon tape, but it's designed for propane fittings. And that's what you use on the non-flared threaded fittings.
Typically, that's yellow tape, I believe.
I use the yellow stuff on my trade wind.
But the important thing I want to really get across is for your appliances, any flared fitting, even with water, you don't use any Teflon tape. It's just a metal-to-metal contact. You spray your soap on there, you tighten it down, and you wait to make sure you don't get any bubbles from the leaking gas, and you got a good gas-tight connection there.
And if there is a leak, it'll bubble right up.
Yeah, but you have to really watch, because there can be very small leaks. You know, we found in Rich's Caravelle, actually, when we were doing some work on it, that his fridge, he had a propane line that was leaking, and he had no idea, you know, and the oddest part was his, underneath his fridge, right in the wheel well area, some sort of bird, I think it was a crow, got in there. There was a dead crow stuffed in underneath the wheel well and the fridge area. I thought that was almost a canary in a coal mine type scenario, because it was right next to his gas leak. But he felt that he didn't have any problems with it, and he didn't die or get sick or whatever, because the floor was so rotted and the windows were so leaky that all the fumes were going out. Now that we've sealed everything up, having good propane connections made better sense.
So we better also say now's a good time if you don't put you in a propane LP detector, put you in a carbon monoxide detector and a smoke detector, especially if you're going to be sealing up that trailer. You want to have all that stuff so you have good safety for your family.
Oh, definitely.
And if you're a little nervous about working with propane gas, maybe hire somebody to help you go through it the first time. What do you guys feel about if you've gone through it, your system's been known to be good? How often do you need to go back over and check it? Should you go check those connections maybe once a year in the spring when you're starting up? Or do you even need to do that? What do you think?
I think that's good practice. You know, once a year. There's issues. You know, coming loose is one thing, but, you know, road debris flying up, hitting those joints underneath, the whole propane system is really at the mercy of whatever sort of roads you go down. Ambassador, it had a huge dent in one of the propane lines from a rock flying up from the road. And, you know, it didn't leak, but the fact that it was so crushed, it very easily could have leaked on the right on the edge where it was crushed. A bigger issue may have been it may have limited the flow considerably, where it might have allowed the fridge to work, but when you lit the stove, it would cause the fridge to go out or the water heater to go out. You know, there's pressure reduction issues that can come as a result of crushed lines.
Yeah, that's a good point. Besides just looking for leaks, looking for that road debris hazard, that whatever damage it may have caused. Well, that's about all I had, guys. Do you have anything else you wanted to add?
I know a lot of people also on the propane, a lot of them put the little adapters up front, and they actually run other lines to outdoor accessories like camp stoves or lanterns and stuff like that. And the camping world, any good RV store would have those type of tees up front that you can adapt to your outside appliances for cooking and stuff. I think that's another piece on the propane that, you know, I haven't added one yet, but you know, I've seen people at rallies that have them, be it a little lantern or a little, you know, propane cook stove outside. In the summertime, being able to cook outside is a big plus, not having the heat inside. Having full-time in the trailer for 4 years, you know, I've done a lot of cooking in my stove. I know a lot of people don't even use their stove or oven in their trailer because when they're out camping, they're, you know, going out to eat and stuff like that. But, you know, I've used it a lot, and, you know, they work great. I'm more of a pizza guy myself, so.
Well, come on, you can cook a pizza in your oven?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Cooked many of them.
I actually use a portable propane one outside on the table, usually unless it's rain or something. Then we fire up the one in the trailer. Yeah, we have a good time.
Of course, a lot of people now have those microwaves in their trailers, so they're getting away from that propane stuff. But back in the vintage time, and the propane, you know, it works good.
Well, when you're boondocking, that's what you're going to have, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right, I just wanted to mention, I don't know if we did, that the Wanderlust book, as far as I know, it's only available at Airstream.com. We'll put a link to that in the show notes as well.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
All right, guys. Well, hope you're having a happy Thanksgiving Day.
Thank you. You too.
All righty. Well, there you have it. That concludes Episode 6. I'd like to thank Colin Hyde and Rob Baker for stopping by on this Turkey Day and wish everybody out there a happy holiday season. Thanks for stopping by, guys.
Thank you. Right. Happy holidays, everybody.
Same here, everybody. Have a good one.
Well, there you go. As they say, another show is in the can. I'd like to thank you for tuning in. Be sure to head on over to the website at thevap.com. You'll find the show notes there. List all the topics we discussed in the show, as well as any links we may have mentioned. And while you're there, if you got any questions for the Pano Pros, be sure and send those in so they can help you with your vintage troubles. And also, you can send in those topic suggestions that you'd like to hear discussed on the show. You can email any of those to questions@thevap.com. And again, I'm your host, Tim Shepard, wishing you a happy holiday season. And until next time, we hope to see you down the road. Take care, everyone. So I thought we might as well talk some turkey. Have either of you guys...
Speaking of turkey, where's Colin?
Ooh.